Topic at hand, of course, is tshuva. That's the main thing that we need to be thinking about right now. And in many regards, it's the main thing that a Jew needs to be thinking about over the course of our entire lives. Because if we think about tshuva as a return to God, or perhaps a return to self, and that's what we're going to discuss this evening. If we think about tshuva as a means of perfecting ourselves, if we think about tshuva as a means of perfecting the world, so that's really the entire life of a Jew. Of course, it's during these days that we start to think about it that much more. In Chodesh Elul, in Tishrei, it's Rosh Hashanah, it's the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, it's Yom Gedalia, it's Yom Kippur. So of course we become all that much more focused on what it means to return, and to correct, and to perfect. But it's the entire life story of the Jewish people. To try to lift ourselves up a little bit, to try to make the world a little bit better, and to take steps towards the Geula Shleima, towards Mashiach. I want to begin by speaking about one of my heroes. And the truth is, when we think about heroes, we think about role models, people who shape our lives, they come in all sorts of different types. There's different types of role models, different types of heroes we encounter over the course of our life. There are the heroes, there are the role models we know very well. It could be a parent, it could be a friend, it could be a sibling, it could be a grandparent, it could be a teacher, a rabbi, the rabbi of your shul. It could be someone in the community who shapes your life and shapes your values, shapes the way that you think. There are heroes who we interact with, who we know very well, who we have a deep bond and connection to. There are the heroes of our lives, who maybe we have the opportunity to meet once or twice. If you ever heard Rabbi Sacks, you ever heard the Lord, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, speak about the opportunity he had to meet the Lubavitcher Rebbe on just a few occasions, it's very, very clear that those few encounters with the Lubavitcher Rebbe shaped his entire worldview. Or if you ever read the Hesped, you ever read the eulogy that Rabbi Sacks offered for Rav Soloveitchik, and how he recounted, how he recalled that 1968 encounter with the Rav in Yeshiva University, sitting outside Rav Soloveitchik's shiur room, sitting on a bench for hours, and having Rav Soloveitchik explain to him why the halachic process is, why Jews believe in the halacha, in the system of halacha, the way that we do. It's very obvious. Again, you read how Rabbi Sacks, a brilliant thinker, a person who interacted with so many, but it's very obvious how Rav Soloveitchik in that single encounter was able to literally shape the way he thinks about his life as a Jew, about his interaction with the world around him. So there are the heroes, the people who we've had a chance to catch a glimpse of, maybe face to face, maybe one conversation, if we're lucky, two or three conversations. And then there are the heroes of our lives, and I'm sure we all have heroes and role models in all of these categories. There are the people who shape our lives we never met. We never met them face to face. We never met Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We never met Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. We never had that face to face encounter with the Avos or the Imaos, or whoever it is that we open up the pages of Tanakh and we're captivated by their stories and by their courageous efforts to better humanity and the Jewish people and to share Torah values. Or maybe someone even in our times. Maybe someone whose biography or autobiography that we've read. Maybe someone whose teachings we've encountered indirectly, through their writings, or through their students, or through their family members. So I want to share with you, I want to speak about one of my heroes. And again, I certainly have heroes in all those categories. But I'd like to speak about one of my heroes in that third category. Someone who I really, really wish I could have met. And unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to do so. But someone who, it's very clear to me, much of my philosophy as an educator, and really much of my philosophy as a Jew, comes about in an indirect way through the writings, the teachings, and through the recollections of the students of this great Torah personality. And the person who comes to mind, who I'm speaking of, is Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, it's amazing. I don't know if anyone in the room had the opportunity to meet him, but it's always, any time I mention his name in a shir, anyone who has had the opportunity to meet him comes up after and says, no matter how much you speak about how great Rabbi Freifeld was, he was greater than that. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld was the founder of the Shari Yashiv Yeshiva in Far Rockaway. And he was a giant. He was a giant of a human being. I mean, he was a very tall person also. And he carried himself with, you know, rabbinic garb. And he was a very charismatic personality in the way he would present himself, the way he would speak. He had a very distinguished and very dignified presentation and look to himself. Right? But he was a giant in spirit. He was a person, to use, I guess, modern language, someone who really got it. Somebody really got it. He understood what people needed to hear. And he had a way of conveying that. He had a way of taking American kids who very easily, at that time, could have ended up in public schools, and somehow sitting with the children and sitting with the parents, was able to convince them, let your boy come to my yeshiva. Now, if you've ever seen the Shari Yashiv Yeshiva today, it's a black hat yeshiva. It looks like many yeshivas. But it started off with American kids in Grateful Dead t-shirts with ponytails and ripped jeans. And Rabbi Freifeld saying, come learn Torah. Come see what it's about. Come see what it's about. They say, one of his colleagues, one of his friends from his yeshiva days, said about Rabbi Freifeld, just to show you again the degree of wisdom he had in understanding human beings. They said about Rabbi Freifeld, one of his friends, again from his yeshiva days, said, if you wanted to know, when we were in yeshiva, if you were learning a piece of Gemara, and you got stuck on a difficult Talmudic passage, and you wanted to know how to interpret it, there were many boys in yeshiva you could have asked. If a person was learning a halacha, you wanted to know what does Jewish law say about a particular matter, again, there were many people in yeshiva you could ask. But if you wanted to know what Yiddishkeit itself, what Judaism itself said about any key issue, any critical issue of what it means to be a Jew, Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld was the address. So I want to share, really as a springboard into this conversation we're going to have tonight, I want to share a recollection that was shared. Rabbi Freifeld passed away about 25 years ago now, at a much too young age. He's only 66 years old, if I'm not mistaken. And this story goes back, let's say, 30, maybe 32, 34 years, to when a Shabbaton, a Kiruv Shabbaton, was held in his yeshiva. And there was an organization, a professional Kiruv organization, that hosted this beautiful Shabbaton, and people came, and people were inspired. And at some point over the course of that Shabbos, the head of the organization got up and said, I want to present to all the people who are gathered here today, as we're trying to inspire them to get involved in Jewish outreach, and to get Jews involved, and get Jews connected to their Judaism, I want to express, and the speaker was a very good speaker, he said, I'd like to express the mission statement of our organization. What it is that we stand for. And he went on, he gave a beautiful presentation, and he said, the key vision, the key mission statement of our organization, our goal, if I had to summarize it in one sentence, is to be able to take Jews who are far from God and His Torah and to bring them back to God. To take a person who's disconnected from God Himself and to bring him back to God. And it was a very powerful speech, and people were very moved by it, and people were very inspired by it. And he got a standing ovation at the end. And a few minutes later, it was Rabbi Freifeld's turn to speak. And Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld rose to his great height out of his seat, and he turned to the head of this organization, and he said, it was such a beautiful speech, and we're all so inspired, and you're a friend of mine, and you do such tremendous work, and you're Makariv people, and you do so much good for the Jewish people, but I want to just fine-tune your mission statement a little bit. Because you spoke, as part of your presentation, you said that the goal of Kiruv, the goal of Jewish outreach, is to help a Jew to come back to Torah, and to come back to mitzvos, and to come back to God. And Rabbi Freifeld said, that's all true, but I think the focus is a little bit off. Rabbi Freifeld said the focus in Kiruv, the focus in the process of tshuva, of a Jew coming back, is about bringing a Jew back to himself or to herself. Because only when you can bring a Jew back to his neshama or her neshama, when you can bring a Jew back to his essence or her essence, only then can you use that relationship with oneself to go from there to connect to God. What did Rabbi Freifeld mean by that? What does it mean for a Jew to come back to himself? What does it mean to find oneself? Right, we talk about people say, I'm searching for myself, I'm looking for myself. My brother teaches in a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, in the old city called Oraita. And one of the Rashi yeshiva, Rabbi David Aaron, I once heard, he's a very good speaker, I once heard him share, he said he had a young woman who was interested in becoming more religious, sitting at his Shabbos table. And Rabbi Aaron is an English speaker, and some of his children who are all types and stripes of Jews. And he said one of his daughters, who was young at the time, who didn't speak English very well, was sitting at the table. So Rabbi Aaron is conversing with this young lady in English, and his daughter is listening in. And this girl is describing her own journey to becoming more religious. And she says, yes, she starts describing her family life, what a strange upbringing she had. And she says, my mother went off to Japan because she was searching for herself. And Rabbi Aaron's daughter is sitting there, and she's listening to this. She's trying to like decipher these little pieces of English that she half understands. And she turns to her father, and she says to her father in Hebrew, what does it mean? Her mother's searching for herself, trying to find herself in Japan. How do you lose yourself? This little girl says to her father, how does one lose? Right? And Rabbi Aaron's very dramatic, so he says, imagine she goes to Japan, and she's in this hotel, and she checks out of the hotel, and then she comes back. She comes back a half hour later, she says, I forgot something. I think I forgot myself in my hotel room. I was going through my suitcase, and I packed everything, and I can't find myself. Can you help me find myself? He's trying to explain to his daughter, in translation, from the English to the Hebrew, right, what does it mean to find oneself, to search for oneself? But it's a term that we all sort of get, and we sort of use, Right? That in the tshuva process, we're trying to find our true self. And Rabbi Freifeld said, that's the key to tshuva. It's not about coming back to God, it's about coming back to yourself. So what does it mean for a person to come to oneself, to find oneself? And where do I start to look? Where do I search? How difficult will this process be? So it's very interesting. We go back a couple of weeks. We read a few Shabbosim ago. In describing the process of tshuva, the Torah says, "Ki karov elecha hadavar ma'od b'ficha uvilvav chalasosa." Tshuva ha-mitzvah hazos, which the Ramban and many of the other commentaries on the spot, the mitzvah that's being described as the mitzvah of tshuva, says the Torah, it's karov elecha hadavar ma'od. It's not like searching for something where you lost something, right? You're on a picnic somewhere and you put something down and you go back to that huge field and you're trying to find, where was I sitting exactly? And I left a small thing on the ground and I can't find it. Says the Torah, ki karov elecha hadavar ma'od, the thing that you're searching for is actually very close to you. It's b'ficha uvilvavcha la'asoso. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart. It's actually very close. You don't have to go searching the whole world. You don't have to go searching in the, you know, running off to India and meeting with some Buddhist monk on top of a mountaintop to find yourself. The Torah says for a Jew to find himself or herself, it's actually very easy. Ki karov elecha hadavar ma'od, b'ficha uvilvavcha la'asoso. If you're willing to open your mouth and to engage in conversation with God, but maybe even conversation with oneself, and if you're willing to open your heart, if you're willing to look inside of yourself, this mitzvah is very easy. Now I want to take a time out, because I know that some people are thinking, tshuva is easy? Did God Himself just tell us that tshuva is so easy? Tshuva is one of the most confusing processes that a Jew goes through. It's one of the most uncomfortable times for many of us of the entire calendar year. We feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking down from the heaven, and he's got his, you know, his heavenly flashlight, and he's shining it into our hearts, and he's checking us out. We said it on Rosh Hashanah, we'll say it again on Yom Kippur, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bochein levavos, badin, Hashem is gola amukos, he delves into the depths, he wants to look deep inside your heart to see what's going on. In the deep recesses of your heart, do you really believe in me? Are you really committed to the Torah values that I presented to you through my Torah? Right? And a person, a little bit, wants to just go under the covers and like wake me when this whole thing is over, when this scary judgment passes. My daughter came home from school, like any good, you know, little child coming home from school, and she's bringing home, you know, beautiful pages that she colored in school. And there's a picture of a chauffeur, that's sweet. And then there's the apple and the honey, and that's very sweet. Right? And then there's that scale, that looming scale, right, where everything is being weighed. Right? And as a first grader, like, it doesn't really resonate, but I'm looking at the scale, I'm like covering the scale, like, oh look, apple and honey, that's nice. You know, chauffeur, oh yeah, we love the sound of the chauffeur. Right? But then there's that scale that's like hanging out in front of us, and we're just, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is weighing everything so precisely. And you come to shul, and the chazan starts to chant, Unesana Tokef, Kedusha Sayom, it's No Reva Ayom, these are awesome days. I had the opportunity earlier today to speak in Yeshiva University in a program with Rabbi J.J. Schachter. And he said when he was in Yeshiva, he said some of his friends, they used to refer to these days as awful days. Awe-filled days. Right? They're days that are filled with awe. They're yom no ra'im. Right? But in a certain sense, they're awful days. They're horrible days. They're such frightening days. What does Hashem want from us during these days? God, tell me what you want. It's very confusing. I look through the davening and I try to figure out, there are aspects that are very positive, there are aspects that are very scary. What is it that Hashem wants? Ki karov alecha davar ma'od, it's supposed to be so easy. If it's so easy, so why is it so confusing? Why is it so overwhelming at times? Why do I feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is out to get me? I'll tell you an amazing story. I've shared it a few times recently, but I have to share it again. It's my story for the month this year. I saw in a memorial journal for Rav Nachum Pertsavitz. Rav Nachum Pertsavitz was one of the great Magidei Shir of the Mir Yeshiva. He was a genius in Torah. He had such a clarity in explaining his Talmud lectures. Gemara Shir was so clear that by the time he finished presenting the Gemara, you almost didn't understand, like, what was the novelty of what he said? Because he took the most complicated passages of the Gemara and he explained them with such a clarity that you almost didn't recognize what was his innovation in the sugya, in explaining the concepts. So Rav Nachum was a very special person. He was the son-in-law of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who also served as the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva. Rav Nachum passed away in the 1980s. So I read a story in this memorial volume that they published for him. It says that one time he walked into the Beis Medrash. There were two young men learning in the Mir Yeshiva, and they were standing by their shtenders. And it was one of those moments, you know, a long day of learning. They needed a break. So the two chavrusas, the two friends, they were talking. They were just schmoozing, catching up, whatever they were talking about. All of a sudden, you see the Rosh Yeshiva walking your way. You know, it's time. When the general walks into the, walks into the barracks, all the soldiers salute, they line up, everyone's on their feet. 1, 2, 3, the guns are in position, right? So the Rosh Hashiva, the Rosh Hashiva walks into the Beis Medrash. You don't want to be caught, as the Rosh Hashiva walks by, you don't want to be caught, talking about the Yankee game or something like that. So as Rav Nachum Partzavitz is coming by, one of the two fellows gives an elbow to his, his learning partner, to his chavrusa. He says, Rosh Hashiva's coming. So immediately, they get into a position, and they start to shuckle, and their thumbs are out, and they're twirling, and right as Rav Nachum passes by in front of their shtenders, one of the boys, b'kol ram, in a loud voice, to make sure the Rosh Hashiva hears, he blurts out, he says, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbi's taught. So Rav Nachum stops, and he looks at the boys with a huge smile on his face, and he says, ah, boys, I'm so happy to see you're learning so beautifully. He says, but I just want to point out, we're learning Maseches Nedarim this semester, this man, and not once in Maseches Nedarim does the phrase Tanu Rabbanan appear. Not one time. Can you imagine to have it at the tip of your tongue, your fingertips like that? So when I read this story, I said, not that I don't trust Rav Nachum, but I have to verify the story. So of course I went online and I googled, how many times does Tanu Rabbanan appear in Maseches Nedarim? I searched on the Bar Ilan CD-ROM, and lo and behold, not once in Maseches Nedarim does the word Tanu Rabbanan appear. So if you can't even outsmart, if you can't even trick the Rosh Yeshiva, you're certainly not going to trick God. There is a beautiful little postscript to the story, just to show you that there are people in the world who have such a grasp of Torah. They told the story to Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita, one of the gedolim in the world today, one of the greatest Torah geniuses of our generation in Bnei Brak. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky, when they told him the story, he started to chuckle. They said, Rebbe, what's so humorous? What's so funny? And they could see his mind, going through Shas. So he says to them, well, Rav Nachum's correct. It doesn't say Tanu Rabbanan Maseches Nedarim. But there is one place, on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, there is one place where it says Di Tanu Rabbanan. So it could be, maybe we could be Malami Tzchus, we could try to save those boys and say, oh, maybe that's what they meant. They just said, Tanu Rabbanan, but there is one place in the Dharm. So immediately I checked that, of course. And one place in Maseches Nedarim, Di Tanu Rabbanan. Unbelievable. But again, if you can't outsmart your rabbi, right, you're not going to outsmart God. So the Torah says, Kikar V'lecha Darmot, it's so easy to do tshuva. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming, Nisan HaTokev, Kedusha Sayom. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bochin Levavos Badin, V'gol HaMukos Badin. And a person says, where do I go? Where do I turn? How do I begin the process? How do I search for myself? Hashem, what does it mean to come back to you? Where do I begin the process? And again, the answer is exactly what the Pasuk says. If we could just be brave enough, B'ficha U'Vilvavcha La'Soso. If we're willing to open our hearts, if we're willing to look inside, if we can get past whatever blockage is preventing us from being able to get in touch with ourselves. The Pasuk a couple weeks ago said as well, Umal Hashem Lokecha es Lavavcha. We ask Hashem, God, please circumcise our hearts. Please remove whatever blockage, whatever it is, whatever's holding me back from embracing my Judaism fully, or more fully than I'm engaged currently. Whatever's making me not like davening, or not like learning, or not want to work on speaking less Lashon Hara, or remembering to make brachos when I eat. Whatever's stopping me from doing the things that you want me to do. Hashem, please help me to open up my heart. Because if I can just open it up, I'll realize that what? Kikar v'alecha darmod, it's really not that hard. And by way of myself, not from without, but from within, a person can come back to God. I read an amazing story of Ron Yitzchak Eisenman. He's a rabbi in Pesach. He wrote a couple of books. And in one of his books, he told the following story. There's a halach in Shulchan Aruch that on Yom Kippur, when we come to Yom Kippur, one of the ways that we enhance the day, to give honor to the day, is that we make sure that the shul is very well illuminated. Now, Bizman is that a different calculation. We have electricity. But certainly in the olden days, they would light many, many more candles in the shul in order to give honor to the day. That it should be burning bright, that the shul should be lit up in order to inspire us to tap into that light. Yom Kippur, in particular, there's such a halacha, because normally on Yom Tov, we enhance the Yom Tov in a variety of ways, with nice clothing, with a festive meal, with lights in the Beis Medrash, in the shul. So on Yom Kippur, where we have less eating, and less drinking, and less physical expressions of delighting and enjoying the day, enjoying the Yom Tov, so there's specifically, the Shulchan Aruch says, you should make sure that the Beis Medrash, that the Beis Knesses, is well illuminated. So Rabbi Ron Yitzchak Eisenman, his shul in Pesach, it's one of these really old, super tall structures. One of these really, really old structures with a main sanctuary with ceilings probably double the size of this room. So he said it was one year before Yom Kippur. And all of a sudden he comes to shul one morning, a few days before Yom Kippur. He looks up and he notices that a couple of the light bulbs in this ceiling are out. A couple of the bulbs are out. So you ever wonder? You ever wonder, Rabbi, do you know how they change the bulbs in the ceiling? Right? Someone has to do it. I always wondered.
Dan.
Who does it? Dan? Who's Dan? Dan, you really? How tall are you, Dan? Wow. Okay. Okay, don't spend the rest of this year trying to figure out how Dan changes the bulbs in the ceiling. That's also worthwhile to think about. Right? But you have to wonder. You have to wonder. So Rabbi Eisenman said, in his shul, the way that they change the bulbs in the ceiling is the following. You climb up onto the roof, you open up this hatch, you lower yourself down into this crawl space. Then commando style, you know, you like shimmy across. Then you lower yourself down onto this platform on top of the Aron Kodesh, and then there's like another crawl space. He said it's very dangerous. It's very physically challenging and demanding. Needless to say, whenever a bulb's out, you know, all the custodians of the shul seem to be missing, right, for the next couple of days. So Rabbi Eisenman said, he said, the custodians didn't like this job very much. But his son, Aryeh Eisenman, a little precocious young, you know, young boy, he loved this job. He would like sit around waiting, you know, you'd see him like in shul, like looking up, waiting for a bulb to go out, so he could have the opportunity to climb up and to change the bulbs. So his father says to him, you're in luck. It's a couple of days before Kippur. Shulchan Aruch says, you got to have lights in the shul. Okay. So he turns to the shul president. Rabbi Eisenman turns to the shul president. And he says to the president, you know, we have to, a couple of bulbs are out. I'd like to get them changed before Yom Tov. No problem, Rabbi. He goes to the storage room. He checks. Out of bulbs. And they're special order bulbs. It's an old shul, special order bulbs. So he says, Rabbi, we're not going to be able to get them in time for Yom Tov. So, okay, the rabbi's a little disappointed. Aryeh Eisenman is crushed. You know, he was looking forward, right? We took our kids the other week to like one of these rock climbing gyms on a Sunday afternoon. Had I known about the Shul Mpseh, I could have just taken them to the Shul Mpseh. I could get some communal service as well. Climbing upside down. So little Aryeh Eisenman says, you know, Dad, Abba, Tati, whatever he calls him, he says, let's at least get a head start on it. I don't want to forget after Yom Tov. I'm sure you don't want to forget either. We'll have the same problem next year. So let me at least climb up. I'll take out the burnt out bulbs. And that way it'll be a reminder to us after Yom Tov to replace the bulbs. So the father says, okay, you know, I know how much you enjoy it, swinging upside down with your, you know, rope off the Aron. Okay, fine, you can do it. Aryeh Eisenman comes home at the end of the day, and he turns to his father, he says, I finished the job, I took out the bulbs. So his father says, great, wonderful. He says, and I replaced them. I replaced them with new bulbs. So he says, where did you get new bulbs? I spoke to the president, we don't have bulbs. You can't buy them in a regular store. Where did you get bulbs from? And he said, his son told him the following. He said, when I opened the hatch and I climbed into that crawl space, I noticed that there were a couple of bulbs, perfectly good bulbs, that I had left there last time I went up to change the bulbs. So I took the bulbs that were there waiting for me, and I replaced the bulbs, and now we have a beautifully illuminated shul for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Eisenman said, he said, that's Yom Kippur. That is Rosh Hashanah. That is Yom Kippur. Ki karav alecha davar mod b'fichul vavcha lasosa. Every one of us has that hatch, whatever it is, that blockage of the lathe, that's a little bit dusty, with a little bit of cobwebs growing on top. Right? And if we're just willing to dust it off, or we're just willing to open up the hatch, we've been saying, L'David Hashem Ori, throughout Chodesh Elul, in these days, throughout the beginning of Tishrei, we say, L'David Hashem Ori V'yishi. Chazal, our sages interpret, Ori B'Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, there's a new light in the world. There's a chance to relight the bulbs, to rekindle whatever bulbs have grown old, have become extinguished over time, are feeling burnt out. And we wonder, where am I going to get this new light? Where am I going to replace the old light that once burned inside of me? Where am I going to get this fresh energy from? This new drive, this new light, this new illumination, this connection to God. Where is it going to come from? And I start to look all around, I'm looking outside of myself. The pasuk says in Parshas Va'eschanan, Uvakashtem Misham Es Hashem Elokecha, that sometimes as Jews, we're so quick to look outward. Uvakashtem Misham, you'll seek over there, Es Hashem Elokecha. You'll go searching for God over there, and if it doesn't work out over there, you'll look over there, and you'll look over there. Says the pasuk, "Umatzasa ki tidrashenu b'chol levavcho v'chol nafshecha." Where, in fact, will you find God? It's not about looking out there; it's about looking here. And when Aryeh Eisenman entered into that little crawl space, he found that the bulbs are waiting for him. And every one of us can do the same thing: to try to look inside of ourselves, to try to be who we are supposed to be, to come back to Hashem from within ourselves, not from outside of ourselves. There was a fellow who once came to shul, and the Gabbai turned to him. It was time for Kriyas HaTorah. At the end of the lane, the Gabbai turned to this fellow, and he said, Hagba. Hagba, come on up for Hagba. The other Gabbai said, whoa, this guy can't do Hagba. So he's very insulted. I can't do Hagba? Why can't I do Hagba? He says, no, this is a very heavy Sefer Torah. You're not cut out for this type of Hagba. He's very insulted. So the guy says, I'm going to show this Gabbai. He thinks I can't do Hagba. He doesn't think I have the ability. I can do Hagba. So the fellow goes to the gym. He gets a personal trainer. He's working out. He's pumping iron. You know, he goes to the sofer in town. He says, I need to borrow a puzzle sefer Torah. What do you need to borrow a puzzle sefer Torah for? Don't ask so many questions. He borrows a puzzle sefer Torah. He's practicing Hagba every day. You know, this is his morning workout, his evening workout. Finally, he comes back to shul. He's all pumped up. He's ready. He sits down right next to the bima. Right, comes Shabbos morning. It's Shacharis. It's time. You know, Kriyas Torah, and he keeps like clearing his throat to get the Gavi's attention. The Gavi looks at him. Doesn't know what he wants from him. And he's trying to show off his new muscles. Nothing. Very insulted. Comes back Mincha time. He's huffing and puffing, and he comes in. And he sits down. And the second they take the Torah out of the Aron, he's clearing his throat. Finally, the Gavi looks at him and he says, "No, Yaakov ben Baruch, come on up." So he comes up and he grabs the Torah and he picks it up and he opens it up, 15 columns, swings it around, and everyone sees, and he sits down, and as he does his own Galila, he's really, and he turns to the Gabbai and he says, "What do you think of that?" So the Gabbai says, "Kind of weird considering I called you up for Levi. Can you put the Torah back? Can you put the Torah back on the bima so we can get back to laning?" A person says, "I want to be this, I want to be that." Uvakashtem Yishamas Hashem Elokecha. I go looking for Hashem over here, I go looking for Hashem over there. Umatsasa, but where will I find God? When a person's willing to look inside, when a person's willing to open the hatches, sometimes we even need to open up multiple hatches. Sometimes there are layers and layers of blockage over the years of not engaging myself. Forget about engaging God. Engaging the neshama inside of oneself. L'davar Hashem Ori, I told you, Chazal say, Ori is Rosh Hashanah. That when is God my light? God is my light on Rosh Hashanah. That every year, this time of the year, we have a chance to make contact with that light called God. So let me ask you, when you think of Hashem as a light, what do you picture? What do you picture? So the first thing I picture, I walk outside on a clear day, and all of a sudden the clouds part, and that beam comes down, right? And I'm standing there, and the light of Hashem is shining upon me. I picture a God, who's a transcendent God, somewhere out there, somewhere in the outer realms, who is interested in me, is shining his light down upon me, and I'm basking in that light, and I'm warmed by that light, and my life is illuminated by that light. But again, it's God out there, and it's me down here. What if I told you, L'davar Hashem Ori can be viewed the very opposite? L'davar Hashem is my light. What does it mean Hashem is my light? Why am I calling that light that's all the way out there? Why am I referring to that as Ori, my light? Because I have some mild contact with it from such a distance. What if I view God not as some transcendent God who's somewhere out there in the outer realms, but what if I view God as someone who's very imminent, someone who's very real in my life? What if I think about the L'davar Hashem Ori in the context of the pasuk in Mishle, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam? That the candle of God, that the light, the fire, that the flame of God as presented in this world is Nishmas Adam, is the soul of man. That means my soul is one with God's light and God's light is one with my soul. That it's not again some search for God somewhere out there. It's not uvikashtem mishamas Hashem Elokecha. It's not some strange process. Lo niflesim mcha, like the Torah says. Lo me'ever liyamhi. It's not on the other side of the ocean. Lo b'shamayimhi. Lo rechoka. It's not far out. It's not strange. It's not foreign. It starts from within. It starts by recognizing Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. And again, sometimes it means opening up many, many layers. There's a shul in Brooklyn, a Russian shul. Many Russian immigrants daven in this shul. Most of the people there have a very limited Jewish education. And there's this fellow, there's this young man who learned in yeshiva. He has a very beautiful voice. And he's been davening there as the chazan for many years. And he's one of the only people who really knows how to use the machzor. Some of the people holding the machzor upside down. He tries to sing a spirited tune. And people hum along. They don't really know the tunes. They don't really know the words. And yet there's something that keeps drawing him back for years. He describes how he kept coming back to this shul. He wanted to be the chazan. He felt there was something very special about these Jews, despite their very limited connection, at least superficially, to God, to Torah, to Yiddishkeit. They know very little. But there was something there that was so special to him. He just kept coming back. He said, there's a fellow there, Mr. Gorelich, this 80-year-old Russian fellow, who he said every year, he used to watch as he would come on Yom Kippur, and he would drag along his grandson. Now, as little as this grandfather knew about his Judaism, this grandson, who was born in America, who had been to public school, right, who was totally, totally unaffiliated, no connection to Judaism at all, except for his grandfather schlepping him along on Yom Kippur, he looked totally out of place. He looked so uncomfortable. He didn't even pick up the machzor. And yet you could see that this grandfather was like beaming with excitement, just knowing that his grandson was coming to shul on Yom Kippur. It meant so much to him. And he brought him along year after year after year. Okay. So this chazan, his name is Yitzchak, he said, finally one year, he got he gained a lot of clarity in why he loved this shul so much. He said, this Mr. Gorelich, this 80-year-old Russian fellow, with a limp, not a very strong-bodied person. He said he was called up one year, he was invited up to open the Aron for the beautiful piyut, for the beautiful song, V'chol Ma'aminim. V'chol Ma'aminim, and all believe what we sing on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So this Mr. Gorelich, he makes his way up very, very slowly to the front of the shul, and he pulls open the curtain, and he opens up the Aron, and he kisses the Sefer Torah, and he goes back, he starts making his way back to his seat. Okay. All of a sudden, the Chazan notices as he's about halfway back to his seat, all of a sudden he turns around and starts heading back up. So the Chazan's thinking, I'm going to sing a few tunes, it's a longer piyut, it's responsa, back and forth. It's going to be a few minutes before he closes the curtain. Maybe he's older, he doesn't think it's worth it to go all the way back, so he's coming back. He's trying to figure out why is he coming back up already, not up to closing the Aron yet. So it's Mr. Gorelich, he makes his way slowly, very slowly, back up the steps, and he comes over to the Aron, and he sees that he's standing in front of the Aron, and smack in the middle, there's this little Sefer Torah. This mini Sefer Torah, amongst all the other bigger Sefer Torah. And he notices that on the choshen, on the breastplate, the silver breastplate, on this little mini Sefer Torah, crafted into the silver, is this little miniature Aron. Like a little replica of a miniature Aron with these tiny little doors. And he sees Mr. Gorelich. He takes his shaking hand, and he very carefully opens up these tiny little doors, and he puts his finger through this tiny little crack, and he kisses the Sefer Torah. And he makes his way back to his seat. And this Chazan said, it was so obvious to me, as this fellow made his way back to his seat towards his grandson. His grandson who feels that this has nothing to do with him. There's layers and layers of blockage. He said, it was so obvious to me that when he was opening not only the outer doors of the Aron, but those inner doors of that tiny little silver Aron replica on that breastplate. It was so obvious as he reached in, as he poked his finger through just to kiss that little Sefer Torah. He was reaching into he was metaphorically reaching into his grandson's neshama. And saying, open up, you can do this too. It's possible for you. Ki karav alecha davar ma'od, even for you. It's b'fichu v'vavcha la'soso. If you're just willing to open up, not just again the big outer doors, but to open up those inner doors, and to dig a little deeper. Because ner Hashem nishmas adam, because the candle of God, the flame of God, burns inside of every single Jew. The Sfas Emes, the great Ger Rebbe, he had a son-in-law known as the Ben Dina Rav. I have a little sefer at home, some of his Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, some of his writing on Kadshim, some of the harder passages of Shas. And in there he brings a beautiful expression from his grandfather. He says, my grandfather used to say the following. In one of the Shabbos Shuvah Drashas, he says, my grandfather used to say the following. He says, my grandfather used to say the same way that if you go to England and you want to converse with someone in England, you have to speak English. That's how it says in the sefer. English. An, ayin, nun, gimel, lamed, yud, shin. English. If a person from England, only speaks English, so he says, my grandfather used to always say, so too the heart only understands the language of the heart. The heart only understands the language of the heart. What's the language of the heart? It's this pasuk. Ki karav alecha davar ma'od b'ficha uvavavcha la'asoso. For a Jew to look inside of his own Jewish heart and to realize that God programmed me with all of the tools that I could possibly need to discover Him, to have a relationship with Him, to feel connected to His Torah. I have everything. I've been pre-programmed with everything I could possibly need. There's a Rashi in Parshas Tetzaveh. Rashi uses a phrase one time in the entire Torah that he uses nowhere else. Rashi's describing the Big Day Kahuna. And Rashi says, this one looked like this, and this one looked like that, and he's using the Midrashim, he's using the Gemaras, he's figuring out, he's trying to paint the picture for us, right? So that when art school has to print the pictures in the back of the stone Chumash, they'll know what the Big Day Kahuna looked like. But then Rashi gets stuck. He says, when it came to the ephod, when it came to the apron, Rashi says, I looked in the Medrash, no indication. I looked in the Gemara, no indication. I have no clue what the ephod looked like. So Rashi says, Libi Omerli. My heart tells me that this is what it looked like. And Rashi goes on to paint a very vivid description of what the ephod looked like. I was reading a sefer a few months ago, and I saw that the Alter Slobodka once commented on that Rashi. He said, better than any proof that Rashi could possibly bring. Better than any Maimar Chazal, any teaching of our sages, better than any archaeological evidence, better than any proof that Rashi could offer, a historical record, right, a tradition, better than any proof that Rashi could bring. Any text-based proof, any archaeological proof, better than any proof in the world for what the eifod looked like. The Altar of Slobodka said the most meaningful proof, in my opinion, that Rashi could offer are those words, Libi Omerli. Because the pure heart of Rashi, where would we be without Rashi? Could we even open a Gemara? Could we even understand? Would the Torah itself be understandable to us without Rashi? And therefore, a person who has such a refined Jewish heart, such a tzaddik, such a Talmud Chacham, such an outstanding human being like Rashi, like the great teacher of the Jewish people, if his heart tells him, if his Jewish and sensitive heart, which is certainly in the right place, tells him this is what the eifod looked like, then says the Alter Slobodka, I don't need any further proof that this is in fact what the eifod looked like. 1931, the Chafetz Chaim called an emergency meeting, brought together many rabbis from various parts of Europe, an emergency meeting of Rabbanim, to speak about a particularly harsh governmental decree that had been issued against the Jewish people. And many people got up to speak, and people presented about practical ways to try to repeal this decree. And the Chafetz Chaim felt that people weren't presenting in a way that truly captured the severity of this decree, of how dangerous and how threatening it was to the Jewish community. So the Chafetz Chaim got up to present. And the Chafetz Chaim got up and he said, this terrible gezeira against the community, against the Jewish people, is so serious we have to be prepared to give our lives for it. Give our lives for it. A little bit exaggerated. People were, the rabbis in the crowd were whispering to one another, give your life for it. Where does it say you have to give your life for such a thing? You know, we know there are things, God forbid, a Jew has to be prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice for. For Avodah Zarah, for Gilei Arayos, for Shvichas Damim. There's a few things that one has to sacrifice for. But this was, I mean, it was a difficult thing. It wasn't good for the Jewish community. But that the Chafetz Chaim should say that we have to be prepared to be Moser Nefesh for this, to die for this. Everyone was murmuring and whispering, what's the source for this? Where does the Chafetz Chaim get away saying such a thing? And the Chafetz Chaim noticed that people were uncomfortable with what he had said. That they assumed that he was speaking in an exaggerated fashion. So the Chafetz Chaim got up and he said, everyone wants to know, what's the source? How do I know? How do I know that this is such an important issue, such a pressing issue for the Jewish community? So the Chafetz Chaim said, you want to see what the source is? The Chafetz Chaim opened up the lapel of his jacket and he pointed to his heart, and the Chafetz Chaim said, you want to know what the source is? Dosh steht dosh. It says it right here. It says it right here. This is the source. And after that, no one questioned the Chafetz Chaim. There was no question. When the tzaddik, again, a righteous person, the caliber of the Chafetz Chaim, whose whole life was dedicated to spreading God's message in this world, to helping Jews, to teaching Jews how to speak, the way the Chafetz Chaim spent his whole life trying to teach people the severity of Lashon Hara, of Shmiras HaLashon, of how much destruction we cause upon ourselves when we speak negatively about one another. For the Chafetz Chaim to open up his jacket and say, Dosh Shtei Dosh, it says it right here, that was all the people needed to hear. The Vizhnitsa Rebbe, the Avas Yisrael of Vizhnitsa, was known as the Avas Yisrael for his tremendous love of Jews. He was particularly strict when it came to Pesach. Pesach in general is a difficult holiday, but he was really meshuga about every last crumb of chametz, even more so than the halacha demands. He was on the floor, and he had a candle, and he was scrubbing, and he was looking, and every time he'd find a tiny crumb of chametz, he'd let out a sigh and a groan, oi, chametz, chametz, chametz is the Yetzer Hara. He was a very big avoda, many, many hours. So one year, after Bedikas Chametz, the Vizhnitsa Rebbe had scraped and cleaned every last nook and cranny, again, much more than the halacha demands, and he got up and he turned to his gabbai and he said to his gabbai, his trusted confidant, he turned to his gabbai and he said, I just realized there's one place that I forgot to check. And he handed his gabbai the candle and he handed him the little spoon and the feather, and he opened up his jacket and he said to his gabbai, check my heart. Check my heart. Tell me that there's no chametz here. Check, maybe there's chametz in my heart. So the gabbai replied to him with the Mishnah Maseches Pesachim. The Mishnah says, in a place where no chametz is brought, no bedika needs to be done. He says, Rebbe, there's no chametz. You don't bring chametz into your heart during the year, and there's no way I'm going inside to check your heart. And your heart is pure. But the truth is, every Jewish heart is pure. And when we come to Yom Kippur, when we come to these days, these are the days when maybe we actually start to believe it about ourselves. That we start to look at ourselves and say, you know what? It's not only the Chafetz Chaim, and it's not only the Vizhnitsa Rebbe, and it's not only Rashi, and it's not only the Alter Slobodka, and it's not only the greatest Jews who were endowed with the gift of a Jewish heart. Ki karav alecha davar ma'od b'fichu v'vavcha la'asoso. Hashem says, for every single Jew, it's very close to you. It's within your heart, it's within your reach. If you'll just open that hatch, you'll realize that you have the same heart, that same pure and pristine Jewish heart that all of these great Torah leaders have. And it's just for us to look inside and to believe that we have such a heart. I want to share with you a passage in the Rambam. It's a very tragic Rambam. But it resonates in a particular way this time of the year. The Rambam, in Hilchos Geirushin, in the Laws of Divorce, the Rambam describes a very, very broken and sad situation. Unfortunately, you hear about this once in a while, where a husband and wife have parted ways, maybe civilly they've parted ways, right? And we know that it's an obligation for the marriage to be halachically severed. The husband has to give his wife a divorce document, has to give her a get. And the Beis Din have determined that there is absolutely no compelling reason for a husband not to give his wife a get, given the situation. And this recalcitrant husband, this person, for whatever reason, out of an act of cruelty, out of spite towards his ex-wife, refuses to give her this get. Now the Torah says we're not going to allow such a thing to happen. The rabbis say we can't stand by and allow this poor woman to be an aguna. And therefore, by the letter of the law, again, maybe not so easily applied today, but by the letter of the Gemara, of the Mishnah, right, the Gemara says, Kofenotso, we can apply pressure, even physical force against him, at Shayoma Rotse'ani, until he decides he wants to give the get willingly. Because the halacha says that for a get, for a divorce document to be given and to be legally binding, it has to be given of his own volition. He has to give it willingly. So imagine the scene. The Rambam describes at the end of the second parak of the Laws of Divorce, he describes the scene. Maybe I'll dramatize it a little bit. Right? But all of a sudden, this fellow gets a knock on the door, and he opens up the door, and he sees some of the chevra from the Beis Din in these long black trench coats, and they bully their way in, they push the door open, they grab the fellow, they say, we heard you're interested in giving your wife a get. So he says, no, that's not true, I'm actually not interested in giving my wife a get. So they grab the fellow, and they start twisting his arm, and they say, but we heard you're interested in giving your wife a get. So he says, no, I'm actually not. Right? And as they start to apply more and more force against him, finally he blurts out, okay, rotsa ani. Right. So the sofer's standing by, the sofer's, oh, look, he says, willingly wants to give the get. They write the get, and everything's good. The edim are there. They administer the get. So the Rambam says, what a perversion of the halachic system. Because he blurted out the words, rotza ani, so that means he gave the get willingly. Halacha would approve of such a get. That's considered giving the get willingly. And whenever I quote this Rambam, I always say the Rambam, Maimonides, the great rationalist, the doctor, the medieval philosopher, right? The rationalist Rambam all of a sudden sounds like a Hasidish Rebbe in this passage. Because the Rambam says, yes, it makes a lot of sense. Because deep down inside of every single Jewish heart is a desire to do what's right. And sometimes the Yitzhar gets the better of us. And sometimes the Yitzhar gets the better of us to such a degree that things which should be so obvious as an act of decency, like giving this get to this woman in this situation, become so difficult for the person to make the right choice. And therefore, when the Beis Din are exerting pressure against him, it's not that they're moving him away from his inner desire. In fact, they're helping him to express his inner desire. They're pushing aside the Yetzer Hara, so to speak, and allowing him to express himself the way a Jew should express himself. To be able to say, Rotzeh ani, I really do want to do what's right. Because why would I want to take advantage of another person? It's a difficult situation for both of us, but why would I want to abuse the system to take advantage of my poor wife? And therefore, when he says the words, Rotzeh ani, halacha says, that's what he really wants to say. That, in the depths of his heart, is what he really wants to say. Rabbi Moshe Wolfson, who's a great rav in Borough Park, Shlita, you should be well. He's an older man at this point. He was a mashkiach of Torah Vadas for many, many years. Rabbi Moshe Wolfson has very, very deep Torah insights. And when he talks about this passage in the Rambam, he says, what day of the calendar year is, so to speak, the day where every Jew says, Rotzeh ani, I want in. I want to be involved. Get me connected. This is my day. It's Yom Kippur. It's the day that everyone shows up to shul. It's the day that the person who doesn't come the rest of the year wants to be in shul, wants to be connected. Right? It's the day where every Jew says, I feel that I can actually have a place here. Even if the rest of the year I feel that Judaism doesn't exactly fit for me. But Yom Kippur is the day that every Jewish heart and every Jewish soul screams out, Rotzeh ani. Says Rabbi Moshe Wolfson, a beautiful, deep insight. He says, if you take the gematria of the word Rotzeh ani, the numerical equivalent of that phrase, that magic phrase in the Rambam, that allows this person to express his deepest, innermost desire despite all the layers of Yetzirah and blockage that exist on top. When he says Rotzeh ani, Rav Wolfson says that the gematria, the numerical equivalent of Rotzeh ani, is 362. Which is the exact same gematria as the words Yom Kippur. Because on Yom Kippur is the day that every Jew says, Rotzeh ani, count me in. Deal me in. I want to be a part of this. Ki karav alecha, it's not hard for me. It's not foreign to me. Ki beficha uvavavcha lasoso. It's very realistic for me. It's possible for me to do. And I believe in myself and that I can actually discover who I really am. So to come back to where we started. When Rav Freifeld was sitting, when one of my heroes was sitting at that convention, at that Chinuch Shabbaton, that Kiruv Shabbaton, in his yeshiva, in Shar Yashav Yeshiva, about 30 years ago. And that great speaker got up and he said that Kirov and Tshuva is about returning a Jew to God. Rav Freifeld said, I want to change the focus. Kirov is about, Tshuva is about returning to oneself. Being true to one's own essence. Being true to one's own neshama. Coming back to one's own heart. B'fichul v'avcha la'asoso. I want to leave you with a medrash. There's a beautiful medrash in Shir HaShirim. It's one of my favorite medrashim. I share it very, very often. In Shir HaShirim, it's commenting on the pasuk. The medrash is commenting on the pasuk. Lo yadati nafshi samasni. The medrash tells the following story. Imagine a princess kidnapped from the king's palace many, many years ago. And this poor girl, she's growing up down by the train tracks. And she's hanging out with the lower element of society. You know, spray painting graffiti on the side of the trains and on the buildings. And so involved with all sorts of bad people. And one day the king is traveling along the highway with his royal caravan. And he looks out the window and he notices this girl. He sees this girl playing down by the train tracks. And he says, that's my daughter. That's my princess. That's my child who was kidnapped, was taken from the palace so many years ago. And he tells the driver, stop, stop. They stop the vehicle. And he sends out one of his trusted officials. And he, you know, buttons the stop button. And he goes over to the... This girl thinks he's in big trouble. Right? I'm about to get arrested or something. And he says, the king would like to have a word with you. The king wants to have a word with me. So she makes her way back with this, you know, this official of the king, all the way up to the king's caravan. And her friends are trailing behind. And he swings open the door and he says, please get in. And she gets in and she sees, you know, the king sitting alongside. She can't even begin to understand what's going on. The king turns to her and he says, I want you to know something. You're my daughter. You're a princess. You don't need to wear those rags. You don't need to be involved with those people. You don't need to live. The medrash says that he saw her down by the tracks plucking food out of the garbage. You don't have to eat out of the garbage. You have a whole palace. You have a whole kingdom waiting for you. And as the car pulls away, with her friends clinging to the window, they say to her, we never knew. Can you imagine all these years? We were best friends playing down by the train track. We never knew you were a princess. We're shocked. We can't believe it. And as she's pulling away from them, she turns to them one last time and she says to them, and how do you think I feel? How do you think I feel all these years that I am the princess and I didn't know that I was a princess? Lo yadati nafshi, says the Medrash, explaining the pasuk. Lo yadati nafshi. So too says the Medrash. The Jewish people were in Mitzrayim. 210 years of oppressive slavery. Jews born, died, killed in Mitzrayim, the lowest ranking members of humanity, if human at all, treated like subhumans. The Jews were bullied, the Jews were ridiculed, the Jews were despised. And then all of a sudden, God Himself comes down from the heavens, performs 10 magnificent plagues, takes the Jews out of Mitzrayim, says the Medrash, the Umbas HaOlam turn to the Jewish people and say, we never knew. We thought you were the lowest members of planet Earth. And in fact, you're the children of God. You're the chosen people. We never knew such a thing. And the Jewish people, as they turn their backs on Mitzrayim and head to Har Sinai, say to the nations of the world, and how do you think we feel? Le'adati nafshi, we never knew who we were. We spent too long being convinced by you, being convinced by others, that we're not worthy, that it's not possible, that it's unrealistic, that every excuse that we could possibly come up with to explain why it can't be. But when Hashem says it can be, that's the greatest proof that it can be. So I give us all a bracha. I give us all a bracha. When we come to Yom Kippur, it's the day of Rotzani. It's the day where a Jew is able to open up that hatch, like little Arya Eisenman, to crawl into that place that sometimes makes us a little bit uncomfortable, into that crawl space we haven't gone maybe in a long time. And to be able to look inside and to see if maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu left a few bulbs for us as well. That maybe something's still burning bright on the inside. Maybe it's possible for us to rekindle our relationship with Hashem. And to do it in the way that Rav Freifeld said. Not to go looking, to search for Hashem there, or there, or there. But to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu from within ourselves. Ki b'ficha uv'vavcha la'asos. Gemar chesimah tov.